Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
If it was foul play, somebody knows something. But I think that they have always kind of said that the police have always told us they have nothing concrete to point it towards foul play.
I just wish somebody would do something. For his dad, anyways, his dad's 75, and to have an answer.
I'm considering open until we find something to go on. At this point, stuff we haven't had a ground search for that like we did for the last or the first year or so of the investigation. And we still got people that live out there that are on my posse and stuff. They're constantly searching for clues that we can possibly come up with, you know. And there's nothing that we've found so far, but we're not giving up on that, that's for sure.
...43-year-old Donald Duggar was last seen in Moore Road, Minnesota in the early morning hours of August 11, 2012. Don was a trucker and had just returned to his place of employment to return the semi he was driving, and his plan was to then drive his car back home. Don called his sister and explained that there were people outside of his truck and that he was concerned. She heard Don ask, "What do you want? I'm trying to cooperate." He then told her that he was about to call 911. Police responded to the scene, but the people Don had mentioned weren't there. They left after speaking with Don and later returned to see him loading his belongings from the truck into his car. This is the last time anyone saw Don Duggar. His car was later found abandoned on an ATV trail inside the Beltrami Island State Forest. Over 6.5 years later, Don is still missing, and his case remains unsolved. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 169 of The Vanished. Donald Duggar's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. At the time of his disappearance, Donald Duggar was single and living on his own in the Detroit Lakes area of Minnesota. He was working for a trucking company that was located about 3 hours away in Moore Road, Minnesota, close to the Canadian border. In his free time, Don was known to be an avid hunter and fisherman. In the weeks leading up to his disappearance, Don was away on the road trucking for about 3 weeks. Because of Don's lifestyle and job, it wasn't out of the ordinary for him to go for periods of time without contacting his family, especially when he was out on the road. Since Don had just been on a long trip to the East Coast, his sister Diana had not heard from him until she got a call early in the morning on August 11th, 2012. Here's Diana.
I got a phone call from him at like 4:30 a.m. And he said that there was somebody outside of his truck and he didn't know what was going on. And he actually, while he was on the phone with me, he hollered out,
who's out there? What's going on? What do you want? I'm trying to cooperate. Then he told me that he was going to call the police and that he would call me back. So I said, okay. And I didn't hear back from him. And I had to be to work at early that morning. So I tried calling him back on my way to work. He didn't answer. His phone went to voicemail. And I tried several more times throughout the day. But the last thing in my mind was that, oh, he's not going to, you know, he's missing. He's never going to contact us again. So I didn't think any more of it. We tried calling me and my son, tried calling him a couple more times throughout the week. I knew that he was supposed to come home for a couple of days before he went back out on the road the following Monday. So when he called me, it was 4:30 in the morning on a Saturday, and he would have came home to Detroit Lakes for a couple of days and then gone back up to War Road to go trekking again on Monday. So not that I forgot about it, but I didn't really think much more of it. He could take care of himself. I'll just say it that way. He was a bigger guy and tough exterior, you know.
As the days passed with no word from Don, Diana decided to see if her father had heard from him. They had an important family event coming up, and she was certain that Don wouldn't miss it.
I talked to my dad and said, have you heard from him? No, but he thought he would be home next weekend for sure, because we had a family reunion. The following Friday, we were all out at my other brother's place for a family reunion. And my dad came out there and he said, you know, I got the strangest phone call from the War Road Sheriff's Department, but I'm not sure what they were saying. Maybe you could give them a call for me. And my dad's a little bit older. He's 75 now, so he's probably in his late 60s at the time. And I think he was maybe a little nervous about why they were contacting him, not ever still ever thinking that it was because he was gone.
Diana was already concerned because she hadn't heard from Don since that early morning phone call. Given the fact that no one had heard from him, and he said that someone was outside of his truck during the call, she jumped into action and contacted the police.
We contacted them, and they had found his personal vehicle in the middle of Beltrami State Forest on an ATV trail. It was hung up on a stump on an ATV trail. Nobody in it, all of his personal belongings in it. They wanted to know if we had heard from him. Well, so when we found that out, me and my other brother and two of my cousins that were there for the family reunion said that we were going to head up there and find out what was going on. And they said that at that time, the sheriff's department said, no, we'll just hang on. We'll do a little more investigating and then we'll let you know. Well, we hadn't heard back from him by the next morning, and we decided that we were just going to go up there anyway.
Many searches were conducted to find Don, but they all came up empty.
We went out to the vehicle. At that point, we searched for, well, I ended up staying up there for 3 weeks. We did ground searches, air searches. We had a dog, cadaver dog, horse searches, people searches. A bunch of his friends came up and we searched through the woods up there and nothing ever again.
We also spoke to Don's friend, Wade. He told us how he met Don.
Somewhere in elementary school, about fifth grade, we moved back to Detroit Lakes here. Mother had went through a divorce, and that's when I met. He lived on one side of the highway, I lived on the other. We went to the same elementary school, been friends ever since. You know, he never got married, I did. Had married a woman with a kid, and had a couple kids, so I wasn't as close to him as used to be because I had a family to raise, but I mean, we still talked.
Wade told us about a strange text message he received from Don shortly before his disappearance.
We all received a text at about 3 o'clock in the morning. It said, this bullshit. And I was like, I was sleeping, of course. I was up in my cabin with my ex-wife. It was her birthday. I get that in the morning. It's like, I text him back. It's like, what the hell? Don't you ever sleep? And then the next thing I know, I got a phone call from Dan, I believe.
Wade also assisted in the searches for Don.
Of course, we found out he was missing. I went up there right away with my brother. We found his car. And we searched that area, just me and him. Didn't find nothing. They made us clean his car out, which was kind of crazy, but I would think if it was a crime scene or something, we should have never touched anything. But so goes from there. We had to come back, and then my older brother had gotten a hold of the TV station around here, so I did an interview with Channel 11, and we were gathering friends up to go look for him. So by the time, and this got on the news, so then we had a pretty good crowd of people going to look for our buddy. I get up there, and the cops had already got with Diane and told them that we can't have all these people up here looking, da-da-da-da-da. So the minute we start heading out where we're going to go look, they pulled me over out in the woods, and they said, you're going to do things our way, or we're going to arrest you. So they wouldn't let us drive off. We brought ATVs, and they wouldn't let us drive off the road. Well, if I thought he was going to jump out of the road and say, here I am, I wouldn't be up there looking for him. So I didn't get along with that right away. So then they were somewhat helpful, you know, but they kind of had somebody stick with us all the time.
Diana contacted Don's employer to see if they had any clues to offer.
We had talked to his employer. That was kind of odd that his boss said when he heard where they found his vehicle, he was concerned. He's like, geez, I hope he wasn't coming after me. And my response was, well, why would he be coming after you? What was your last conversation with him? And he said, well, nothing bad. He just said that he was going to go home for a few days and he'd be back again on Monday to work. His company never tried calling his phone when he didn't show up on Monday, never tried calling his phone, never contacted his emergency contact. They cleaned out his truck and sent it back on the road with somebody else 2 days later. We thought that was kind of odd.
Don mentioned to Diana on the phone that he planned to call 911 after he got off the phone with her. And he did call 911 that morning right around 5 a.m.
He did call 911, and they did let us listen to that at the time. And he just said, hey, I'm over here, wherever, and there's somebody messing around outside my car. And could you send somebody over? And he didn't sound like he sounded concerned, but he wasn't terribly worried.
We were able to obtain Don's 911 call from the Roseau County Sheriff's Office. Here's the call that Don made that morning.
Roseau County 911.
Yeah, there's supposedly someone outside here. And I keep asking who it is and nobody's saying anything.
Okay, who am I talking to?
Don Duggar.
Don who?
Duggar.
Duggar? Okay, and what's your phone number? Or your address? Give me your address.
I'm from Rochurch, Minnesota.
Okay, and where are you at?
I'm in War Road, and I work for... I'm at this place where he puts his semi-trailer. His semi.
Okay, at whose place?
In town.
Okay.
And there appears to be a bunch of movement and stuff up.
Okay, you don't know where in town?
Yep, right by the clinic, kitty corner from the quarterway to the clinic, just north of there. Just east of Marvin Window.
Okay.
Track.
Okay, hang on, stay with me on the line, okay?
1016. I have a person on the phone, called 911. He is staying at a place where has his trailers and his truck. It's kind of kitty corner from the clinic there, north of the clinic. He hears some activity outside, if you can check that out. Yeah, it's just east of Marvin Windows, across the tracks there.
Hey, mate.
You're on the east side of the road, correct?
West side of the street road that we're on.
Okay, and you would be in a camper, or?
In a semi.
Okay, hang on.
The reporting party is on the west side of the road. He will be in a semi, but he said he hears some activity outside. The location is just east of Marvin Windows across the tracks there. It's kitty corner from the clinic.
And what kind of activity or noises do you hear? Do you hear people? Do you see anyone?
Well, there's movement out there, and with my camera on negative, I can see stuff, but I don't know what they are for sure, I guess. And I keep asking for an answer and don't get one, so.
Okay.
I'm not 100%.
It's good they'll check it out. Do you want to stay on the line with me, or are you?
No, I'm fine.
Okay.
I know the local number, so.
Okay, if anything changes, call back, okay?
All right,
thanks. Bye.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Officer Wade Schultz of the War Road Police Department responded to the call that morning. In his report, it states that he identified Don with his driver's license, and Don asked the officer if he had seen anyone run away from his truck when he pulled up. The officer hadn't seen anyone, but Don stated that he saw people run to the west. The officer checked the area, but didn't see anyone there. Don claimed that he had seen approximately 10 people dressed in camouflage, and that he had heard at least one person speaking about a needle. Don went on to show the officer how he was using his cell phone camera in what he described as negative mode. It was displaying a black and white screen. Don claimed that by using the camera in that mode that you could see people at night. I'm assuming he meant like night vision. The officer and Don walked around the truck together, looking to see if anyone was hiding out near the truck or in the immediate area. The officer noted that Don did not appear anxious and kept a calm, speaking voice. He told the officer that he had the next few days off and was planning to return to his home near Detroit Lakes for the next several days. He was leaving the truck and would take his personal vehicle, which was parked just down the street. Officer Schultz went over to an adjacent field to look and see if he could spot anyone out there. He contacted the police chief and explained the situation. The chief advised the officer that if Don didn't appear to be a danger to himself or anyone else, just to let him go. It was at this time that Officer Schultz left the scene because he had to pick up another officer who was just starting his shift. After picking the other officer up, the two headed back to check on Don. They called the chief back and were told to ask Don if he wanted to go to the hospital. They seemed to have been concerned that Don could have possibly been having a medical or mental health crisis, since they couldn't locate the people he claimed to have seen. Don declined the offer, but did tell them that he had seen the people again when he went to get his car, but that they were gone now. They asked to look in his truck, and Don gave them consent. Inside, they didn't find any weapons, contraband, or prescribed medication. It was at this time that the officers received a call regarding a vehicle rollover with injuries and had to leave to get to the scene of the accident. It wasn't until 6 days later that suspicions started to grow when a man called to report an abandoned vehicle in a very odd spot within Beltrami Island State Forest. The sheriff's office ran the plate and discovered that it belonged to Don. They tried to call Don, but his phone went straight to voicemail. They asked the Becker County Sheriff's Office to go to Don's home, but no one answered the door. When they spoke to Diana, she told them about the call she had gotten from Don back on the 11th, and her concerns because now they had found his car abandoned. The Sheriff's Office contacted Don's employer, who stated he thought Don had just quit since he never showed back up for work. You have to wonder if Don's car had been out in the forest the entire time since the 11th, or if it somehow ended up there in the days after his disappearance. It wasn't reported until the 17th, but Diana found out that it had been seen there earlier in the week, but it just wasn't reported.
We found out later that there was a church group that had drove by his vehicle on Wednesday. So the last we heard from him was on Saturday. They had drove by and seen his car on Wednesday, the church group. Never contacted anybody. And then Friday, some local guys were out scouting for their deer stands or something. And they saw it and they called in to the sheriff's department.
When the car was located, they noted that there were footprints in the area, but no one is certain who they belonged to.
Well, there were footprints. Like probably his size boots that were leading away from there. However, it had rained twice that week, so it wasn't like there was a clear track, and they didn't know for sure if they were his or if they were coming from there.
During the searches for Don, a member of the Rizzo County Mounted Posse found a glove that they thought could have been Don's.
Out on the main road from the trail was probably, I'm going to say, like a half a mile. They also found a camouflage glove that I took a picture of and sent to my dad and said, you know, is this his glove? And because of the coverage up there, the picture didn't come through right away. And so he had sent back a message saying, if it's a camouflage one, with a slight tear in the pointer finger, then they're his because the dog he had just bought fairly new gloves and he was playing with the dog and he had ripped a hole in the finger. That's exactly what it was. The glove had a little tear in the index finger and they were camouflage gloves. It was along the road and it had been pushed up by the road grader because a road grader had gone by. That week, the week that after he disappeared. And so it was probably like a half a mile from where the car was.
When they searched inside his car, they found a gun. According to Diana, this is not something that he would have left behind. He was known to take his gun everywhere. In Don's missing file, even his employer noted to the police that he always carried.
He had a license to carry concealed, as does my whole family. We're very outdoorsy. We hunt and fish and blah, blah, blah. So we all have a license to carry. He did have his pistol in his, it was still in his glove box with two full magazines. And he would have never, ever left that there on of his own free will. I mean, he would have, if he was going to go out walking in the woods, he would have taken it with him.
Looking at the area where Don's car was found abandoned, I wondered if he could have just taken a wrong turn and gotten stuck. His drive home would have been about 3 hours from where the police last had contact with him. The car was found about 22 miles from where he was last seen. Diana doesn't know why or how his car ended up there, but she doesn't think that he just took a wrong turn.
It would have been the route between where he was and home, kind of the back route. But there was, like, normally he wouldn't have taken that way. He would have gone the highway. And from where his car was found to where you would normally drive would have been, it would have been a half mile to a main road, the one way, like the way the car was going towards. But it was probably a half a mile away from a trail going in. So he would have had to drive on an ATV trail for about a half a mile with a car. And it was a little car, but it was not, it's not somewhere where he would have accidentally driven.
Don's cell phone is also missing. This is the information that Diana has been told about the phone.
He did have a cell phone. They tried to ping it, but by the time we realized he was gone, the battery would have went dead by then. It went straight to voicemail, and they checked, and the last call that he had made was to 911.
We also spoke to Roseau County Sheriff Steve Gust for this episode. He said they did try pinging the phone a few times with no luck, and that the last activity on Don's phone had been the calls he made back on the morning of the 11th.
Yeah, I mean, that the phone was off. I mean, we don't know if it was off or just the fact there was no reception where it was at. So, you know, it's just that it wasn't, the signal wasn't connected to it. Yeah, up in that area, there's no signal at all. You can't, I mean, very rarely unless you get to a higher hill somewhere but or top of a tree, but there's generally no phone signal out there. Nothing. That's what I'm saying. It's, you couldn't call anybody out there or call out if you wanted to in some areas. In that area there, you couldn't call out anywhere.
Diana mentioned earlier that she was suspicious of Don's employer based on something he said to her back then. She told me more about that.
The owner of the truck company, just because of what he said, like, oh, I hope he wasn't coming after me, made me a little suspicious because Donnie was supposed to be taking a load up into Canada and he got turned back for improper paperwork, which the Sheriff's Department said was not uncommon. You know, it could have just been that it wasn't scheduled or whatever. There's a lot of paperwork, I guess, when you're going into Canada. And so he got turned back. So it made me suspicious of, you know, was there something in the truck that they really wanted to get into Canada and they were upset because it got turned back? Well, and I should tell you too that we would go up there every few months. I mean, it's been 6 years now, but for the first few years, we would go up there, you know, frequently just to kind of check around, see if we could, anybody would say anything or if anybody heard anything. And when me and his best friend went there, probably 6 months after the whole incident, that trucking company was completely shut down. It's not there anymore. Obviously, when something like this happens, you try and think of every possible scenario that it could be. And it was just odd. That was odd to me. And especially, like, they didn't call his phone ever to see if he was coming to work. They cleaned the truck out, sent it out right away 2 days later. It was just a little odd. And as far as the employer, I'm a supervisor. And I know if one of my employers doesn't show up for work, I'm going to be texting, I'm going to be calling, you know, to make sure they're okay, if nothing else. So I just thought that was odd that they never, ever called his phone to see if he was coming back to work.
From reading the report, it sounds like the police were concerned about Donnie's mental state, because they couldn't find anyone out there. But they also noted that he didn't seem anxious and that he was calm. Is it possible that someone was out there and ran off when they saw the police or heard Donnie calling 911?
There was a little wooded area where his truck was. And to me, it wouldn't, if they were hiding out or whatever, it wouldn't be that tough to pop behind the bushes, wait till the police leave, and then do, you know, come forward again.
One thing the sheriff's department did do was attempt to pull surveillance video from that morning.
There was one surveillance tape in the whole entire town, and it was at a gas station, and they did see his car go by there. They could see it on the videotape, but they couldn't tell who was driving or if he was the only one in the vehicle. They did say that there wasn't anybody close behind.
Even though they searched extensively for Don, Diana explained the unique challenges of searching the area where his car was found.
For about the first 3 weeks, it was every day from sunup to sundown. Probably, I want to say, about 10 miles radius from the vehicle for sure. The woods up there is so incredibly thick that when we would do a search, like a people search, and we'd be walking through the woods like an arm's length apart. If you got much further than that, even with orange vests on, you couldn't see the person next to you. And that year was particularly dry up there. But normally there's, well, and even then there's a lot of bog up there. So the shifting of the bogs, and that's another thing I think about, is that if they did bury him someplace, he could maybe never be found because of the bog. You know, it moves around and shifts around.
Sheriff Gust mentioned that one of the challenges that his department faced while searching for Don was that his car had been out there for several days before being located. That impacted their use of certain search techniques.
I mean, the date was clear that he was definitely in the city world, and his car ended up in our forest, and probably a week later, unusual for him. I mean, items left in the car was unusual that he would leave there. Something that he's generally with all the time is certain items that he always carries with him. And the fact that it was a week later, that, you know, a lot of evidence is gone as far as tracking abilities and stuff like that. And again, just look for anything, clues out to where he still out there? You know, we don't know that. It'd be nice to say he's alive today. I'd like to see that. But I can't determine that. It's been so long ago now that I just wish people would come forward if there was some information regarding that we can put a conclusion to. But like I said, I don't give up on cases. I mean, it's always back in my mind whether or not we can end it or not, but I'm not going to end it, you know.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. One theory that Diana has tossed around is what if he was taken by someone at gunpoint?
I can see that. To me, it would make a lot of sense if that is what happened, if they took him by gunpoint or whatever. It would make sense why he never took his pistol out of his glove box, because if they made him drive, there was no way he would have been able to get to it if they were holding a gun on him. And then the other thing I think is maybe the car was put there on purpose and that they put him somewhere else. You know, it was like to throw off where he could be. What the police told us, which we have a very good relationship with them, even with the psychics and everything, they've always been very open to helping us as much as they can.
One other theory she's thought about is if he could have been targeted because he had a large amount of cash on him.
During the day on Friday, so he called me at 4:30 on the next day, Saturday. Friday, when he had gotten back from out east, he cashed 3 paychecks. So he had $4,800 cash on him. And in War Road, they're the only places to eat after like 6 o'clock at night. Is bar restaurants. So I've often thought too that maybe he went into the bar when he got turned back and came back to War Road to get something to eat because he's a bigger guy and, you know, doesn't scare easily. And he was in War Road, Minnesota, not Minneapolis or Chicago, pulled out that wad of cash to pay for his food and somebody else saw it. Followed him back to his truck and waited till he fell asleep, or waited till they thought the timing was right.
Diana has also considered the possibility that he could have walked away from the life that he knew, but she just can't see him doing that.
Detroit Lakes is a small town, too. The gossip and talk, of course, is maybe he wanted to disappear, and maybe he just wanted to start over, whatever. My mother passed away 3 years before he went missing, and Donnie always thought of himself as especially my protector because I was his only sister and also my dad's. And there's no possible way that he would have just walked away and not contacted us ever again. We're a pretty close family, and I know it can happen, but I really just don't think, and like with the circumstances with him calling and saying there was somebody outside his truck, I just don't think that's even a remote possibility.
One other thing that we need to consider as a possibility with this case is if Don could have been in some kind of altered state of mind. Could he have been having some kind of medical problem? We know his truck was searched and later his car after it was found, and that there were no drugs found. But what about something medical that could have left him disoriented? Diana spoke about his physical and mental health.
Maybe some high blood pressure. I know there was a lot of talk about depression. He was not ever, I don't think he ever even went to a mental health person. ever. My mom had just passed away probably a couple of years prior to that. Was he bummed out about it? Absolutely. Was he suicidal about it? Absolutely not. He had just been in an accident, a couple of little accidents because he was fairly new to truck driving. He had to take a urine test and he passed both of those. So when that was kind of the talk going around, I couldn't understand how that could be possible. He actually hadn't drank at all in years. And so I was pretty forward with the sheriff's department about the, because it was brought up quite a bit about the drug thing, like through rumor or whatever. And my question was, that night, if that was what they suspected, then why didn't they take him in? I really wish it would have been really at this point something medical, because he wandered off from the vehicle. In my opinion, had he just wandered off, we would have found something by now, I think. We had dogs there, cadaver dogs. In my mind, my little story that I tell myself so I have something to believe, I feel like that there was somebody outside of his vehicle, and that when they got to the point in the woods, whatever, I'm just going to say it this way, because I think that's what happened. When they killed him, they left the car there and took him somewhere else so we wouldn't find him.
Sheriff Gust spoke about the possibility of this case being drug-related.
I don't recall anything in the past where he had any deal with dealing with bad people. You know, there's nothing that comes up on that. You know, like a drug world or whatever, that type of thing. I don't think he was involved in drugs, far as I'm concerned. I mean, no one on his history. So it doesn't fit that category, really. I mean, not saying we don't know everybody's background or what they're doing, but that usually you have something that falls in place of that issue.
Diana brought up her concerns about Donnie's employer. Could his work have had something to do with what happened to him? Wade had similar concerns.
The other fishy part is the trucking company he was working for disappeared shortly thereafter. He wouldn't have hauled anything illegal, but I think there was more. To me, they were hauling something more than paper out of Canada. But that's what Donnie thought he was hauling. But he got to the border and he didn't have his paperwork right and he refused. So he couldn't pick up his load. So, you know, next thing I know, my best friend's missing. I think they were hauling something other than paper out of Canada. I don't think Donnie knew he was hauling anything because he wouldn't have done it. Because he was kind of a legal beagle on some of that stuff. He wasn't going to break the law. I think there's more to this. I mean, people just don't go missing.
When Don disappeared, he had only been working for that employer for a few months. Wade explained how he ended up working for a company several hours from home.
He got his CDL, and at that time, nobody would hire you until you had experience. So this was the only trucking company he could get on with that would hire him with no experience. Because I hire truck drivers too, and at that time I couldn't hire them.
Don's case has really hit a dead end, with no new clues since the very beginning. Sheriff Gust is still hopeful that his department will one day be able to solve this case.
Well, it's still open. I mean, I'm considering open until we find something to go on. At this point, stuff we haven't had a ground search today like we did for the last or the first year or so of the investigation. And we still got people that live out there that are on my posse and stuff. They're constantly searching for clues that we could possibly come up with, you know, and there's nothing that we've found so far, but we're not giving up on it, that's for sure. You know, and we rely on a lot of the locals too, who's out there in the woods as far as hunting season, maybe come across something, but nothing as far as any more clues to go on. I mean, at this point, anything that's come up with clarity as far as where the whereabouts, or if you have any clues, if you're still out there, that, you know, to come forward and get a conclusion to the case. I mean, And I'd like to see some closure for the family to, you know, at least they can have some closure to everything as far as if there is something out there. But
in the 6.5 years that have passed since Don's disappearance, Diana has thought about all the possibilities as to what could have happened to her brother and how she never saw this coming at all.
You know, in hindsight is 20/20. Had I known, you know, I may myself have called somebody, but that is the last thing you really ever think of, is that they're going to be abducted or killed or whatever. I mean, it never crossed my mind at the time.
They've been so desperate for answers that they've even considered psychics to help find new clues.
I don't know if I believe in that or not. I can't talk to dead people. I don't understand it, but me and Diane took her up too. There was a woman from town that her son was going to buy Donnie's house. And she was up there with him, and she was in the house, and she said Donnie talked to her, told him the whole story, that these guys robbed him, da-da-da. So we take her up there. I don't know if she's an older lady. I don't know if she'd ever been there in her life, but it's a ways from Detroit Lakes. She takes me right to where the trail would have come out if you just stayed on where his car was. Right there, we walked down a trail. She took me to a tree, and she said this is where his body was. I dug through the dirt. I didn't have any tools, just my bare hands, but I dug and dug and found nothing. But, I mean, that was 2 years later, you know, so by then the critters could have ate him. Who knows? I'm wondering if when I got on the news and said, we're bringing everybody, we're going to find him. If they didn't get nervous and move him, I don't know. You know, you could sink somebody in one of those bogs and they'll never find you.
Diana spoke about the impact that Don's disappearance has had on her family.
He was such a protector of my dad and myself. Like, he acted like he was the father figure, kind of, you know. You know, it's really hard on him. It just, first of all, you never expect to lose a child. And I think it just tears him apart that we can't find something to lay him to rest. At this point, we obviously believe that he's not alive. If he was alive and there was a way to get a hold of us, he would have. He knows that we would be suffering like we are, and he would never allow that. So my dad has a hard time with it. For a long time, he wouldn't even go anywhere or leave the house or even go to the grocery store because he didn't want to be talked to about it or asked about it, or he didn't want it brought up. And there's still, it's kind of crazy because it never goes away. There are people, I work at a casino, and there are people almost every single day that will ask me, did they ever find your brother? And so it never goes away. There's never any closure. We did a memorial thing for him this year on the day that we found, or the day that we know him. The last time I talked to him, it would have been the anniversary of. And I think my dad really thought that that would help him with closure, but it really didn't. And I think even at this point, it's beyond for him what happened. Just, I want to bring him home. I want to lay him to rest.
So what happened to Donald Duggar on August 11th, 2012? We know that he called both his sister and 911 saying that there were people outside of his truck. But were they really out there? We also know that the police came out and he appeared to be acting normally. But the officer couldn't find anyone out there. That left them questioning whether or not there was ever anyone out there. Could he have been experiencing some kind of medical emergency that was causing him to be confused? A camera captured his vehicle on its way out of town, and after that, no one has ever seen or heard from him since. His car was found days later in a state forest. He had left his gun behind, which everyone says was out of character for him. They found his glove discarded on the side of the road, but beyond that, there isn't much more to go on. There's no activity on his cell phone or any of his bank accounts. There's never been any sightings of Don. No one recalls seeing him walking down the road or giving him a ride. Extensive searches were conducted, but they haven't brought them closer to finding Don. If he was disoriented, could he have just wandered into the woods, never to be seen again? Could he have fallen into a bog, which is notorious for being difficult to search? Or did something more sinister happen to Don? Could he have been targeted because someone noticed the large amount of cash he had on him? Or could it be something to do with his work, like Wade suggested? Was he hauling something more than paper and didn't know about it? At the time of his disappearance, Don was described as 5'9" tall and weighing approximately 245 pounds, with brown hair and hazel eyes. If you have any information about the disappearance of Donald Duggar, please contact the Roseau County Sheriff's Office at 218-463-1421.
He called things as they were. I used to have him come up to the deer stand, or my deer cabin, because he lived not far away, and my ex-brother-in-law was up there hunting too, and ex-brother-in-law used to take advantage of me all the time, and I'm just an easy guy. I'll just let it fly. And he'd call him out on it right to his face, and I'm like, Jesus, we're going to have a fight up here. Not what I want. But he would just say things how they were. He didn't care if he hurt your feelings. But he was right most of the time when he said something.
I mean, the car was stuck there. There's no question he got hung up on that stump or whatever it was there. But we don't know. Like I said, if he took off in the woods and or walked on that trail and did somebody pick him up, guess as good as mine. You know, but it's ironic that nobody's seen Hiner here. We get different clues. I mean, I shouldn't say clues of the gun. You know, that was been the first thing. I think he kept that for protection if he was in fear of something out there. But Barry didn't think of it or was in the right state of mind. There was no blood or nothing there, just like he just opened the door and walked out, you know. But nothing, the car was still, he put it in park and wasn't running, key wasn't on, but there was no keys in.
That brings us to the end of episode 169. I'd like to thank Diana, Wade, and Sheriff Gust for speaking with us. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to contact me, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There's a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by filling out a short survey at Wondery.com/survey. Join me next week. I'll be covering a case from California. Thanks for listening.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core. Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loreau, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.